Mayor Curry hosts a community conversation on youth violence, a new investigation into the sinking of the El Faro, and the 2016 Curling Championships take over Veterans Memorial Arena. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can also now watch the show video on demand at tvjax.com. Just ahead, the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Get on the line now with your thoughts. Join the conversation at 549-2937. Then later, don't miss it as we spotlight the work of this area's HEAL Foundation, helping local children on the autism spectrum. Plus, how you can take part in Girls Night Out, Mind, Body, and Spirit. A special opportunity coming up next week right here at WJCT. All of that ahead, but first, it's Friday. That means it's time for our weekly roundtable. Here today, Mark Woods, columnist with the Florida Times Union. Mark, good to see you.
Good morning.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics is here.
Good morning.
Claire Goforth, editor at Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Glad to be here.
So good to have all four of you here. Lots of big stories to talk about this morning, from the latest on the investigation into the sinking of the El Faro cargo ship to a look at where things stand in Tallahassee at the midpoint of the legislative session, and more. We're going to go over all of it, but first this morning, a look at last night's community conversation on juvenile violence in the city. Mayor Lenny Curry hosted this event at FSCJ North with Sheriff Mike Williams, State Attorney Angela Corey, Superintendent Nicolai Vitti, and others. And Curry says communication is the key to stopping the killings in Jacksonville. Right now, we want your calls on the issue of the murder rate in the city of Jacksonville as the mayor kicks off this community conversation on youth juvenile violence in Jacksonville. What are your thoughts about this? Call us up right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And Mark Woods, the mayor, said that the event was planned well in advance of the city logging already 14 homicides in January alone, including the shooting death of a 22-month-old boy who was shot by a stray bullet in his car. This issue of public safety is one that the mayor ran on as he campaigned. And now the conversation continues. Certainly, though, not a new problem for Jacksonville. We have long on and off been the state's murder capital.
Right. Late in the meeting, a gentleman stood up. I think he said he was 78, and he recalled going to one of these. He said, I have videotape from 26 years ago of gun buybacks, of meetings like this. And he kind of rattled off all the things and kind of his frustration that he felt like he had seen this all before. So, you know, you sit there and you have mixed feelings, kind of that, like, are we doing anything new? But on the other hand, there is a certain hopefulness because you have kind of all these important players in the same room, I think genuinely caring and talking about this. So I kind of teeter-totter back and forth between those emotions when I'm sitting there.
Claire, go forth.
You know, I mean, it's a tragic thing that we're having the high levels of murder in Jacksonville, and I commend the mayor for his efforts to reach out to the community. One of the things that, has to be part of this conversation, I believe the Times Union mentioned it today, is the high level of incarceration in the Black community. 2 years ago, Eric Holder, in a speech, said that nationally there are 2.2 million African Americans who have lost their voting rights because of felony disenfranchisement laws. That's 1 in 13 nationally. In Florida, it's 1 in 5. That is a really startling statistic. And if the Black community, I mean, if 1 in 5 African Americans can't even vote, how are their voices being heard by the political establishment?
A.G. Gankarski, the mayor trying to resuscitate the Jacksonville Journey Anti-Crime Initiative, one of the components of that initiative has to do with reducing recidivism rates and reintegrating ex-offenders into local society. The question is, how robust will it be? How much money will there be for these types of programs?
You know, these are the open questions, and a lot of it, as Curry said in a media availability last night, was predicated on the pension tax getting through. Every initiative that Curry is advancing is predicated on that revenue coming in. You know, that being said, you know, if you look at the rates of incarceration that we were just talking about, Deion Johnson, one of the panelists at the Community Conversation, said that 75% of his juveniles are in for murder. So, I mean, it's not incarceration for, you know, small-scale drug deals or something like that. This is straight-up murder. And, you know, if you look at why that's happening, why life is getting cheaper again in that community, you have to look at economic indicators. You have to look at things like, you know, the incarceration culture that has predicated since Bill Clinton was president. You've got to look at things like, you know, the drug laws, which are radically different in the Southeast than they are in other parts of the country that, you know, are not, you know, quite so racially mixed. I mean, we have these bigger macroeconomic issues. So, you know, looking at it in that context, the question is, you know, how much can be done with the Jacksonville journey? You know, yeah, you can stem the tide of recidivism, you can do prevention and intervention, but there are larger macroeconomic cultural issues at play, you know, both inside, you know, the communities where the at-risk youth come from and, you know, inside our own dialogue and criminal justice in this country.
John Burr, do you agree? Are the city leaders limited in what they can accomplish given these larger forces at work?
No, I don't think they're limited. I think it takes some different types of thinking than what we've seen so far. You know, one of the big things that has to happen is the communication between the Black community and the police has to improve. There's a huge distrust of the police department in this town among the Black community, not just the Black community, but, you know, and that, you know, that is mirrors what we've seen in the last couple of years across the country, Ferguson, places like that. And it speaks to the high incarceration rate. If you're if one in five young Black guys is got a felony record, you know, how willing is that population to come and work with the police to stop crime? But they have to do it in order to be effective.
Stop snitching is still real. You know, that's still a reality. You know, one of the things that Curry called for in his media availability was for churches to take a more active role, you know, for churches that do missions to places like Haiti to actually do missions closer to home in these at-risk communities and actually do some work. You know, but, you know, another component is that a lot of this, you know, these communities are driven by the underground economy. If you don't have jobs nearby except for one convenience store or something, you know, what are you going to do to support your family? What are you going to do to support your kids? You're going to be on the corner. You know, if you don't have parents in the home, if your dad's incarcerated or has left or what have you, you know, or if your grandmother's raising you, then who are you going to look for as a role model? You're going to look at the guy on the corner who actually has something a little bit more than the people in the neighborhood have. I mean, this is something that, you know, it's politics 101. And I think Curry would like the Black churches to actually take more of a role in helping out, but, you know, I
and
think,
some of them have.
Well, they do, yeah, but this is the thing. Have. The Black churches don't have universal buy-in in that community.
Right.
You know, and for good reason. You've got pastors like Fred Newbill, who drives a Rolls Royce, you know, who's ministering in the hood. And, you know, that kind of dysfunction is not lost on people, you know, who otherwise would be in those churches. You know, if you've got the pastor with the Rolls Royce, you've got a pastor living out in Queens Harbor, as another prominent pastor does, and then comes in to be, you know, drive-by minister, then, you know, there is a credibility gap there.
There may well be a credibility gap, but I do hesitate to give religious institutions more responsibility. The more responsibility you give them, the more power you give them. And we already have disproportionate amount of power in religious institutions, particularly
in
Jacksonville.
That's our reality in Jacksonville.
But one of the things that I keep, you know, that seems to be missing from the conversation is the correlation between tough on crime and this high incarceration rate. The mayor talks about being tough on crime. Angela Corey is very tough on crime. And when you're tough on crime, you're sending people to jail for lengthy sentences where they get, you know, trained in all sorts of criminal enterprise. And then they exit and they can't get a job because we still have that check box on the application, which is before the Florida legislature this year. If you check that box or you have a felony, good luck getting a job.
It's actually banned in city employment.
But how many employees is that, though? It's not citywide.
And also, you can't vote as a felon in Florida if you're convicted of a felony. Let's go to your calls right now as we discuss the issue of youth violence in Jacksonville. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Evan on the north side. Hi, Evan. Good morning. Hi, Evan. Okay, give us a call back. It's 549-2937 to join us. Jim is on the west side. Jim, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. This is great. Your female guest hit it dead on the head about the disenfranchised and the brother that just spoke about the pulpit pimps. Oh, man, I tell you, the churches is everywhere. Every block there's a church. And the neighborhood and the community is just going down. Why is that? Because their focus is not on the real issue. It's on themselves. And the other problem is that I have, when you look at Black Lives Matter rallies, those people don't have jobs. Anyone with a job didn't have the time or the liberty to be there to boycott. You got to find jobs. You got to give them an alternative. I'm not about no punishment. If you break the law, you got to be punished. But you got to offer them an alternative. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
I am endorsing this guy for city council in 2019.
Really? Yes.
The pulpit pimps phrase is great. One thing that Deion Johnson...
I expect that to turn up in an A.G. Gankersky story.
No, I can't steal it now. It's been heard. But this, this is the thing. Like, Deion Johnson brought this up. On Moncrief, in the neighborhood he grew up, there are five mortuaries within a few blocks of each other. The reason mortuaries are a growth business over there is because you're having so much violence, so much killing, and so on. And, when a mortuary is a leading industry in a neighborhood, that kind of says it all about the value of life. And, we've had a lot of contributing factors to that, but a lot of that is you have a sense of hopelessness that's pervasive in these areas. And part of that, we talked about it again and again, you've got infrastructure in these places that dates from before consolidation.
You've got crumbling infrastructure. You have very limited transportation options for people to get to where the good jobs are in on another side of town in this very far-flung city. These are the elements of structural and institutional racism. There's also generational poverty going back many generations in these communities. And how much of that came up in the conversation last night?
I think all of that did. I mean, they touched on all these things, and none of it's new. So that's the hard part, that we say these things over and over again, and you feel like you write the same columns again over and over again, and the politicians and the citizens, and it's easy to throw up your hands and say, I've got other things to worry about. So that, if I'm going to give credit, I go back to what we mentioned earlier. I do give the mayor credit for making this a priority, which I think he has to after his campaign, because that was a big part of his campaign. So if he does not change this, I think, what you can say, it's a mayor can't change it, but he ran on that was Alvin Brown's issue, that he didn't change this. So if Mayor Curry somehow does not, I think he also probably will be held accountable.
Let's go to Evan on the north side. Evan is back with us. Hi, Evan. Good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing today?
Great. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm actually a biological recovery person. I specialize in crime scene cleanup. I'm from Jacksonville. I'm originally from Chicago. So what I focus in is the worst of the worst, but I try to bring young guys from that community when I'm involved in those crime scenes to come help me. I pay them for their time, but I show them a different side of the life that a lot of people aren't privy to. You had one person speaking earlier about the corner. Well, Jacksonville's formulated a lot different as far as the crime aspect. Jacksonville is more of a high-stakes robbery situation where individuals go against other individuals, and that's why the murder rate is so high. Where in Miami and Houston, you have a very close border connection, and drugs are flowing in. They don't necessarily work like that for this city specifically. There's a reason why people call it Jack City, or you're more likely to be robbed. That is one of the things that criminals specialize in here in the city, and going against other drug dealers. So that's why you see the kind of violence. That's why you see people getting shot in the middle of the street and moving forward, is because of that's really the area of violence, the level of violence that we have here on the north side. So as a person who cleans it up and a person who observed it from a very young age, you have a totally different situation here. And that's why in 2005, we were the motor capital of the world. We were beating out Baghdad. Somebody who's been in the military, such as myself, understand that you have almost two different worlds here. You have the third world where people are killing themselves on a daily basis for just a little bit of gains to feed their family, as the person said. but it's not about sitting on the corner. It's not that type of environment. You do have drug dealers operating here, but you have a more larger population, a larger criminal population of people who just take. And that's
Evan, thanks for the call. Thanks, Evan. John.
Yeah, that's a really interesting insight there. You know, we've talked a lot about the parade of horribles that have existed in Jacksonville for, you know, a long, long time. You know, Mark and I have been here a while and seen this come again and again and again. And, you know, one of the it's kind of time to start talking about some of the possible solutions here. You know, they're refunding the Jacksonville Journey program. That's a good sign. Why it went down the tubes in the first place, you know, was a huge mistake, but it's coming back. That's good. You know, I'd like to see the Chamber of Commerce organize local business to mentor the small businesses in the north side and help those businesses grow. There's a lot of very entrepreneurial guys up there and women who are running small businesses, but they need help. And, you know, that would be a great step for someone like the Chamber to step in and do.
Tweets coming into the show. Julie tweets the show, watch Michael Moore's film, Where to Invade Next. D tweets the show, many issues in the urban community come from poor education and systematic stereotyping. AG.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, those tweets are salient, especially the second one. The fact that you have educational imbalances and, you know, disparities are important. But this is the thing, you know, you've got a couple of issues in play. One, you know, reading is not necessarily modeled in the home. That's why the Jacksonville Journey, one of its programs is the LEAP program, you know, which is, you know, designed to increase access and use of libraries. You know, it's got early childhood education combined with early adulthood education to bring people up on their basic skills. Regarding John's point regarding the Chamber possibly doing entrepreneurship programs, I hope that works out better in their advocacy of the HRO, because they signed off on that and Mayor Curry went in the other direction. You know, but this is really the situation. If we're looking at root causes, you know, you have to look at the schools, you have to look at these other issues, but you have to look at, you know, the fraying of the culture itself in terms of, you know, building that black middle class that was, you know, a thing in a different way, you know, 50 years ago than it is today.
Let's take one more call on this. It's Daryl on the South Side. Hi, Daryl. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts. I'm not originally from Jacksonville, but I've had a great opportunity to travel to some other cities and some other states. I really applaud Mayor Curry for reaching out to the community, especially the religious, the church community, in the African American community. I think that every place I've lived, the church, no matter which denomination, has a great amount of influence and a great amount of power in our neighborhoods. And I think that, you know, being honest, I think for the most part, we don't get an A, maybe a C, C plus, because there is much more that we could do. And someone mentioned earlier, you know, there has to be, you know, somewhat that appearance. We have to be visible in our own communities, you know, get in the streets, getting out in the streets. And when I lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, I saw something that the Mormon Church or LDS Church did, and they actually implemented more social services within, you know, their local church. So if someone needed a job, if someone needed food, clothes, anything like that, well, they would stop into their ward or to their church first and see, you know, what services are available. When we build that trust, you know, Mayor Curry, he's trying, but when we can get that trust going and have those types of, you know, relationships going, then you're going to really see, I think, a big, big difference. And so I think more weight has to be put on pastors and religious leaders just to build that back. And as far as businesses, since I've lived in Jacksonville, I have had the opportunity to see how things work. And if,
okay, Daryl. Yeah.
No. Yeah, okay, very good.
Thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. Great.
Thanks, Daryl. Lots of calls. And right now we want you to call us as we move on to another big story from the week. The number to join us, 549-2937, and it was a busy week for the mayor as he urged lawmakers in Tallahassee to support his half-cent sales tax proposal to pay down Jacksonville's massive pension debt. It's more than a couple of billion dollars. As AG pointed out, we can't fund anti-crime programs or other programs until this gets resolved. Now, the bill cleared the second and final House committee on Wednesday, and it's working its way through the state Senate. But some legislators are raising concerns. The number to weigh in on the pension proposal, 549-2937. Mark Woods, the mayor, trying to get this through Tallahassee so that we can then come back to Jacksonville with some changes in the law and put this before the voters.
Right, and AG touched on it, and the mayor said it repeatedly, that this is the biggest issue. It's not a sexy issue. You know, it's a minutia, and it's complicated. What keeps striking me is not getting into that minutia is that, you know, there's been a series of issues recently in the last couple of years where we've gone to Tallahassee to the governor or legislature and said, you know, we want, can you look into this? Can you help us with this? And they said, no, that's a local issue. Now, this one, we say we have a local solution, a local issue. We have mayor, city council, hopefully taxpayers, unions. If we have everybody lined up and we can solve it ourselves, I will be very frustrated if Tallahassee somehow does not allow us to fix it ourselves. That's the part. That's what the mayor is working on, making sure he has to have everybody on board. But it's, yeah, you know, it's kind of frustrating that to think that it's we can't just say we've got the solution, let's do it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the thing. He hasn't really fleshed out the solution in a way that satisfies everybody in the House. In the State Affairs Committee this week, you know, he was asked, well, if you're getting 60 to 100 billion from tax revenue, how is this basically defray $200 billion of unfunded liability burden a year? The numbers don't add up. One possible solution is amortizing the debt. You know, and if you're taking advantage of today's interest rates, which are basically flat, that sounds great. But, you know, it's like opening up a credit card, you know, zero interest rate introductory, and, you know, then hoping you can pay it off down the road. The tax base of the half-cent sales tax is simply not going to grow that fast. Curry says that, you know, his actuarial analysis bears this out and it's a good deal, but he hasn't presented the hard numbers on this. So he's been teasing out the details. This is something consistent with what he did when he first launched the plan. You know, the media, Times Union, and Florida Politics were both talking about, well, this is the Weinstein plan from 2014. But at the same time, you know, he didn't want to go into the details, and he said the media was trying to sniff it out, but they didn't want to put it out there. At some point, he's going to have to put out the hard numbers, how this actually works, you know, when solvency, you know, occurs, and, you know, when we actually see the tangible benefits of this deal. They're going to have to do that when they sell a referendum. You know, and that's one of the reasons to see the HRO on the back burner, perhaps. One of the reasons to see the Matt Schellenberg term limit bill on back burner, because they want to put everything into selling this referendum deal. But they're going to have to make hard numbers and make that sell to people who are tax averse.
Claire.
My understanding of this is that it's not a new tax. It's a repurposing of an old tax. So we're looking at next year, if this goes through, somewhere between a $60 and $70 million hole in the city budget that for money that we were going to spend on infrastructure. Is that incorrect?
Yeah, that's incorrect, because they still have to pay off the Better Jacksonville Plan application. That's going to sunset in 2030 or when they get it paid off. And the optimistic assessments say maybe 2025, maybe 2028, they can, you know, pay off that. So, you know, there's not going to be money coming in from this particular tax,
right,
for the unfunded liability for a decade.
And there's still a school of thought that another way to have attacked this would have been the politically unpopular approach of a millage rate increase. John Burr, something John Payton pushed through in his second term and took a lot of flack for. During the Alvin Brown administration, Mayor Brown said, absolutely not. We will not see any tax increases. He saw how unpopular that was. The other day, criminologist Mick Hallett appeared on this program. He's UNF's top criminologist and said that a property tax increase, a millage rate increase, in his view, would be the smarter way to go about this. What do you think?
Well, the smarter way to go about it is the way that voters will approve.
Right.
And we're just going to have to see what that is. Now, it's going to be a tough sell no matter what avenue you take with the voters in Jacksonville, because basically, you know, what the politicians are saying is, hey, we screwed up. Hey, we, the city, screwed up. We came up with too generous a pension plan years ago. And, you know, hey, you guys got to dig us out of the hole here, or the whole city's going to fall down and in a crater and dissolve. I mean, you know, is that really a great argument to try to sell something to the voters?
Well, Lenny's saying everybody else screwed up, everybody before him, all the councils, all the mayors, you know, the pension board, they all screwed up, and he's here to fix it. That's Lenny Curry's argument.
I mean, Mark. You know, with the greater Jacksonville plan that Delaney pushed through, I mean, you had all these wonderful projects and say, okay, we could see
something for your money.
That's right. Yeah. And now we're just fixing an old car and trying to make it work. Not very sexy.
We have to fix it. And, you know, I don't see, yes, a millage rate would solve it. And yes, there would be people in town who would support that. I don't see enough city council. The mayor, you know, repeatedly during his campaign said, not on my watch. You know, and if he tried to do that, it would be read my lips, you know, it'd be Elder Bush, and it would. So I don't see that playing out. Whereas he can sell this as a not a new pet tax, a repurposed tax. Mm-hmm. I think the citizens would be much more willing to accept a half cent sales tax than millage rate. So it seems like nothing out there in all this time has been perfect. This seems about as close as we've got. So, you know,
you got to show the numbers adding up. I mean, it's great to say you have a plan, but if I say I've got a plan to pay off a third of my debt, you know, I've still got two thirds remaining. So, I mean, he's got to show his work, basically, you know, and right now we're getting a promise.
That's what my teachers always told me.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it works in math. That's how it works. I mean, show the work, show how the mechanics of the deal are actually going to work. Yeah, right now, that hasn't been done.
AG's making a great point. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is all this gets passed and we get this tax and oh my goodness, 5 years from now, you know what? We're still in the hole. Oh gosh, you know, we're going to have to come back again. You know, nobody wants to go there.
All right. Or perhaps we could shake the JEA money tree.
That's a non-starter, and there's no JEA money tree. There are lots of issues, JEA infrastructurally and everything else.
You don't think that's...
I sit in on the JEA agreement meetings every 2 weeks like clockwork. And there are real issues such as infrastructure, such as the sewer lines in parts of town.
Sewer lines are huge.
You know, you've got the septic tank issue and the conversion project. I mean, they've got $300 million cost on up. Estimates could be as high as $1 billion. So there's no money tree to shake.
But it would be a lot more politically expedient if we
ask Alvin Brown about it. Call him in Georgetown.
Took more money out of JEA and forced them to raise rates. Then everyone can just look at JEA as the big bad guy.
You know, people see through that. I mean, that's why Alvin Brown tried to do. And that's one of the reasons we aren't talking about Alvin Brown today.
We are going to talk about the legislature, though. Meanwhile, the Florida legislature has less than a month left in its session to reach a deal on a new state budget. One of the matters they're looking at is Jacksonville's push for the sales tax hike. But in the main, they're separated by nearly $1 billion in spending allocations and differences between the House and the Senate over everything from tax cuts to health care spending. Mark Woods, Claire Goforth, the major compromises will be in order for Republicans to end the session successfully. Let's hope they can actually do this successfully by March 11th after several failed sessions. We can only hope for one to actually end well this time. Mark Woods.
I was going to say, before you said that, yes, they've had problems with just even making it to the finish and not leaving, walking out. Last year was pretty disgraceful. I mean, it was a sad time for Florida politics. I wish we had Tia Mitchell here from our staff to talk more about the details of what's passing through. But obviously, there's a lot of negotiations, a lot to happen between now and then.
Let's go to Robert in Mandarin. Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead. Okay, Robert. Robert, are you there? Hi, Robert.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just calling out of concern regarding a news story I saw last night, and it involved text messages between our school board or a school board member and perhaps our superintendent. And I just found it to be completely inappropriate, highly insensitive, indignant, and a slap in the face, not just to our superintendent, but to children, thousands of children that are represented, that attend school every day and have an uphill climb and a very heavy lift that live with disabilities, much like our superintendent does. And I think it's shameful, and I believe that nothing short of her resignation would be appropriate at this point.
Thanks, Robert. In fact, that story was first reported by our own reporter Lindsay Kilbride here at WJCT. Text messages released via public records request reveal that school board members texting back and forth, expressing their hostilities towards Superintendent Nicolae Vidi. You can read the whole story at WJCTnews.org and also at the website floridapolitics.com. Claire, the tension between the school board members and the superintendent, nothing new.
No, absolutely not. They have a very contentious relationship. Hopefully they can work together on the issues that they're facing. I know a lot of the boundary changes have generated a lot of interest. And I think some of those boundary changes are actually geared towards what we talked about earlier in the program, which was trying to get rid of the disenfranchisement as much as possible through those moves.
And a couple of other news and notes from the week. The National Transportation Safety Board announced Thursday it's launching a whole new search for that sunken El Faro Voyage data recorder. The search is expected to begin in April. Senator Bill Nelson first made the announcement on the Senate floor Thursday afternoon.
Their decision today to search again for the data recorder, it's a critical step in our understanding of what went so tragically wrong that day. We owe it not only to the families of the lost mariners aboard the El Faro, but to the future safety of all those who travel on the high seas.
Now, the search area of some 13 square miles will be photo and video documented by Sentry, an underwater vehicle that will be launched by the research vessel Atlantis, owned by the U.S. Navy. Sentry can work at depths down to nearly 20,000 feet. We'll continue to follow that story. And the 2016 USA Curling National Championships underway right now at the Veterans Memorial Arena. The top 10 men's curling teams in the land are competing, and the top 8 women's teams. The winning teams will represent the U.S. in the World Championships. And if you want to check out the Community Curling Challenge, that is coming up tomorrow at the arena. They will even have a Learn to Curl zone for the public. AG, I checked it out the other day. I didn't go over there myself, but I checked it out via our reporter's story. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I went over there thinking I'd get a home perm. It didn't happen. My hair's still straight as ever. You know, curling, it's something that's a new sport for people in America, but, you know, you follow it through the Olympics, you follow it through TV and stuff like that. And this is a reality. I mean, the arena's trying to book things for out-of-season events, you know, bringing a curling championship, just like bringing the SEC Women's Basketball Championship. These are good gets because they're trying to monetize these facilities. And if you're trying to turn a profit on something like the arena trying to generate bed tax, you know, the National Curling Championships, even though it's perhaps under the local radar, it's the way to go for the city.
How much is a ticket to the curling cost? I'm kind of curious.
I think it's like $15 or something.
Yeah, it's
like
not
that.
Too bad.
And that's American money, not Canadian.
Well, finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material for you. Right now, it's only in Florida. And only in Florida do people throw live alligators through a fast food drive-thru window.
Yes, meaning the Go Gators.
Yes, it does. A Jupiter man arrested for throwing a live gator into a Wendy's restaurant drive-thru. This happened east of Loxahatchee. 23-year-old Joshua James is charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. That would be the alligator. And a number of other charges. Officials with Florida Fish and Wildlife say James pulled up for his order after the server handed him his order and turned around. James tossed the 3.5-foot gator right through the window. I guess he was not happy with his frosty.
Or James. He wanted some gator tail. It is delicious.
You have to say, gators don't kill people.
And only in Florida is the Caped Crusader a masked menace. Deputies say someone dressed as Batman robbed a pair of dollar stores in East Orange County Tuesday. He walked into the first location, demanded cash, and then 90 minutes later did the same thing at another dollar store. This is only the latest costumed crook to rampage across Central Florida. Last month, a pair of suspects dressed as the Marvel character Deadpool tried to steal an ATM from a business in Brevard County.
Which Batman was this guy? Was he the Dark Knight or was he the Adam West version?
That's a good question.
I hate incomplete reporting.
I messed that all up, but I'll try to find that out for you. A.G. Gankarski, thanks to you, along with Claire Goforth, John Burr, and Mark Woods. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Later, take a little time out for yourself. It's Girls' Night Out here at WJCT. But up next, the life-changing work of the HEAL Foundation, healing every autistic life. That's after this.
I'm Rick Mullaney, director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. On each installment, we look at how public policy affects our lives. Join the conversation with former Florida Governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham and Chris Hamm, former Chief of Staff for Mayor Alvin Brown. That's on the next Policy Matters, Wednesday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
Downton Abbey faced some very modern-day concerns all those years ago.
For years, I've watched governments take control of our lives, and their argument is always the same. Fewer costs, greater efficiency.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Golden Age of Medicine. Next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
I'm Ira Flatow. 100 years ago, Einstein predicted gravitational waves, the last unproven part of his theory of general relativity. Scientists now say that they have detected direct evidence of these ripples in space-time. A look at this landmark discovery with the chief scientist on the next Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, an exciting event is coming up next week in our area to help support the thousands of children here on the First Coast on the autism spectrum. HEALS Party for a Groovin' Good Cause and Bobby Weed's Golf Gig make up a fantastic two-day charity event. It's coming up at the Tournament Players Club Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra Beach. Leslie and Bobby Weed, co-founders of the HEAL Foundation, are here now to tell us all about it. Hey, Weeds. Good morning. Mr. and Mrs. Weed, good to see you.
How you doing? Thank you for having us.
And HEAL, of course, stands for Healing Every Autistic Life. The HEAL Foundation does such important work here in this area. I need to disclose that I do volunteer with your organization. Leslie, let's begin with you. You've hosted this event for several years now out in Ponte Vedra. Mm-hmm. First Coast News anchor Patty Crosby will provide a little celebrity appeal. She'll be emceeing. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, it's a lot of fun, and the community has supported us so wonderfully over the last 10 years, and we raise money. Of course, it stays all in the six-county area, and we've given out $1.5 million since 07, and we have camps and all sorts of wonderful things for the kids.
Everything from camps for children, iPads, to children in the local school system who have special needs. Bobby Weed, there's going to be the party Thursday, and then the following day, it's Bobby Weed's golf gig. People can come out and golf to help support this cause.
Yes, yeah, it's a great addition to the event on Thursday evening, and then Friday morning we'll gather at the TPC Sawgrass and play the Valley Course, which is special to me as I co-designed it with Pete Dye. And so that'll be a lot of fun. Show up at 8 o'clock on the practice tee, and we'll have a shotgun start at 8:30, And then following that, we'll have some awards upstairs and lunch. And, you know, the folks at TPC Sawgrass do a fantastic job. The PGA Tour and TPC at Sawgrass have really backed our projects and supported our foundation in so many ways. And it just makes for a continuing great community association with the tour, the TPC at Sawgrass, and everyone else that lends their support to our foundation.
Absolutely. Over the years, they've lent so much support. And of course, Leslie, you and Bobby got started with HEAL and founded HEAL because of the experience you've had with your daughter, Lanier. Can you share a little bit about Lanier's story and some of the incredible progress she's made in recent months?
Yes. Lanier's our inspiration. She's 17 now. She's diagnosed as profoundly autistic, nonverbal. It's been a long road, but she, because of her, we realized how people struggle and how tough it is. So Bobby and I founded this foundation. We've made huge strides through the iPads, and that's really one of our signature things that we are doing. We're giving iPads to the school system. She is now communicating to us beautifully through the iPad, first time she's ever communicated with us. She was 16 years old.
It was the first time you and Lanier were able to have a real conversation.
Ever, yeah. She only had signed, very limited signs. So we didn't even know she was, you know, that intelligent. We had no way to measure her intelligence. And she's extremely intelligent and talks about being silent and trapped and very concerned about getting others typing. And HEAL is behind all of that and funding that.
And the breakthrough you had with Lanier, when you first shared that story publicly, I think that the thought so many had is the story of Helen Keller and her teacher Annie Sullivan, how she helped Helen Keller communicate with the outside world. The iPad is like that for Lanier.
Yeah, it's revolutionary. It's a miracle. The first thing she typed to us was, "Thank you for releasing my voice," which floored us and shocked us. And the second thing she wrote was, "Tell my mom I love her and tell my dad he's my hero." And that just, it was an absolute miracle. And we're seeing it. We have 30 kids now on the First Coast who are nonverbal who are typing for the first time.
And there are so many families in this area who have children on the autism spectrum, mm-hmm. Bobby, whether they are mildly affected or severely. So many families benefit from the work of the HEAL Foundation through the money it raises and the grants you award. So people really do need to support this event because this is a fun event, whether mm-hmm. you golf or not. This is such an easy way to support this really important cause because the number of kids diagnosed with autism keeps growing every year. And HEAL has really stepped up to support local families in such a significant way.
Melissa, there's no question. Autism is a life-altering adversity to so many families. And we're trying to provide an outlet with awareness, education, with camps and programs that we have put together. And this is a chance for us to all to get together and feel good mm-hmm. and give to a great cause because everything stays right here on the First Coast.
That's right. So get your tickets right now for HEAL's party for a Groovin' Good Cause and the Friday Bobby Weed Golf Gig. It's a two-day event. You can buy tickets for the party and the golf tournament or one or the other, but buy both.
Yeah.
Go to HEALAutismNow.org. HEALAutismNow.org. You're going to have live music, great food and drinks, a live auction, all kinds of fun stuff. Patty Crosby will be emceeing, and of course, the Friday golf gig on February 19th. That's going to be a lot of fun as well. Again, get your tickets for this. HEALAutismNow.org is the place to go. Leslie and Bobby Weed, co-founders of the HEAL Foundation. I'll be there, and I look forward to it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And still to come, a preview of Girls Night Out right here at our WJCT studios. That's next.
Listen to me. You'll thank me later.
The second season of the Breaking Bad spinoff, Better Call Saul, begins Monday on AMC. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from Bob Odenkirk, who plays Saul, Jonathan Banks, who plays Mike Ehrmantraut, and Peter Gould, who co-created the series and also wrote for Breaking Bad. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
John Oliver's show Last Week Tonight will go far for a joke.
We created a church.
What was it called?
It was called Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption. I am your mega reverend. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Your mega reverend and CEO, John Oliver. And
John Oliver on the truth behind his comedy on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
You see them holding hands at the grocery store, wearing matching sweaters, referring to themselves as we. And Snap wondered, is it a phase? Or do they know something that we don't? On the next Snap Judgment, perfect match. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's a chance to take a little time out for yourself in the new year. If you're looking for a boost to your health and your spirit, Baptist Health's wellness program, Good For You, is sponsoring Girls Night Out, Mind, Body, and Spirit. It's all happening next Wednesday night right here at WJCT. Baptist Health, the title sponsor of this program, we need to disclose, and Dr. Patricia Calhoun, Medical Director of Baptist Health's Women's Health Strategy, is here now to tell us all about it. Dr. Calhoun, who would say no to yoga classes, massages, lots of food and prizes? It sounds amazing.
That's a good question. So many women fail to take time for themselves, and that's what this program is about. Women are notorious for taking care of their spouses, their children, their parents, but sometimes we, and I'm included, fail to take care of ourselves. This is an excellent opportunity for women to participate in a program with like-minded women, talk with physicians. There will be six physicians present that women can talk with one-on-one about various health issues and really to take that special time for themselves.
It's going to be relaxing and rejuvenating, just a breath of fresh air, it sounds like.
Yes. And in addition to that, there will be several door prizes that will be available. There will be yoga sessions. There will be sessions on healing touch energy session, chair massage. And again, we will have set up kind of a station program for 3 to 4 minutes per physician where people can talk with various specialists such as cardiologists, behavioral health, primary care, gynecology, dermatology, perhaps to ask some of those questions that you always wanted to ask but never quite knew the right person to ask.
Sure. Now, this is coming up next Wednesday night, 5:30 p.m. right here at WJCT, and people need to go ahead and get their tickets right now.
Yes, that is correct. There is a limited number of tickets that are available, about 175. And the last count I heard, we had a little over 100 that were signed up. So very important to go ahead and sign up. There's the BaptistGoodForYou.com site or GoodForYou.Eventbrite.com.
And people walk out of these things just completely different than how they walked in, don't they?
Absolutely. And it's so important, again, to take care of yourself, to take that special time away, and to really focus on mind, body, and spirit as we continue into the new year.
It's so true, and I'm just as guilty of it as anybody. Just you have to put it on the calendar and make it a priority because we're all so busy. We do put ourselves last.
That is correct.
Yeah, and it and you'll and I think you'll share this too, how even just a little bit of self-care has a documented impact on your blood pressure, the inflammation in your body, your mental state, your heart rate, everything.
That is true. As we go along 100 miles per hour, our cortisol levels rise, our stress hormones rise. So it's very important to continue to take care of ourselves.
So come on out, ladies, to Girls Night Out. It's Mind, Body, and Spirit, Baptist Health's wellness program, Good For You. This is going to be so fantastic. Who wouldn't want to have some massage, some yoga, some hors d'oeuvres, some prizes, a really relaxing night out? Bring your girlfriends. Mark your calendar for next Wednesday night right here at WJCT. And get your tickets now at BaptistGoodForYou.com. Only $25 a ticket, and you get a lot for that money. Thank you so much, Dr. Patricia Calhoun, Medical Director of Baptist Health's Women's Health Strategy. Again, that's next Wednesday here in our studios. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and all of our callers from the week. This show's producer is Sean Birch. Our show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. If you have questions or comments about the show, just send an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast. It's now up every day at iTunes and Stitcher. You can also watch the show now video on demand at tvjax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.